Welcome to episode 350 of Awards Daily's Water Cooler Podcast. I'm your host, Clarence Moy, and I am joined by the other two M's. So, M's, let's go around the cooler and tell the listeners who you are and where they can find you on the internet for the 350th time. Megan, we'll start with you.
Hi, I'm Megan McLaughlin, and you can find me on Twitter at HeyDudeMeg.
Joey?
Hi, I'm Joey Moser. You can find me on Twitter at JoeyMoser83.
And again, I'm Clarence Moy. You can find me on Twitter at Clarence Moy. Happy 350th.
Yeah. So exciting.
Look a day older than 200.
Yeah.
There's a better version of that joke somewhere, but what can you do? What can you do? Hope you're all doing well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't complain.
Excellent. So this week we are going to talk about HBO's Succession, which premiered this past weekend with its season three premiere episode, our first episode. We have all seen at least two. I have seen more than two. I'm a little embarrassed to say how many I've seen because I couldn't put it down. But we're going to talk about the third season and what we like, what we possibly don't like. None of us have talked about this, so I have no idea where we're going. And then we'll talk very quickly about ridiculously early Emmy chances, particularly category placement. I want to talk to you guys and see what you think about something. But before we do that, Megan is going to very likely not be on the podcast next weekend. Megan, I forgot to ask you that, but I'm assuming that you're going to be very busy next week.
Yeah, it'll probably be a little hard.
Yeah, but, because Megan will be covering the SCAD Savannah Film Festival. So I'm going to let Megan cue that up and preview the work that she's going to be doing for Awards Daily while she's covering that festival. And we're going to talk about a few movies we've seen, one that I have seen, Halloween Kills, and one that we've all seen, which is The Last Duel. And then, of course, we'll wrap things up with a flash forward to the media. Thanks, Joey, that we're most anticipating the upcoming week.
Was that a yawn?
It was. It was a well-timed, well-placed yawn. All right. So let's get started with the movies.
Sure.
So let's start with The Last Duel, since everybody has seen that one. So, Joey, why don't you cue us up on The Last Duel and bring us home?
Sure. So The Last Duel is directed by Ridley Scott. It is about Matt Damon, who is a...
Matt Damon.
What is he called? Not a knight.
He's a squire.
A squire, thank you. In France. And he gets married to Jodie Comer's character, and he has the friendly rivalry with Adam Driver, who turns more into like a really sort of angry thing that gets, you know, more and more intense between them. And then there is an accusation from Jodie Comer's character where she accuses Adam Driver's character of raping her. And it's sort of told from three different perspectives, first from Matt Damon, then Adam Driver, then Jodie Comer. It's, based on a true story. I'm sort of butchering this description, but it's I thought the movie was great. I thought it was really well done. I think Jodie Comer is fucking fantastic in this movie. There were a lot of things in it. As I was watching it, it's very frustrating to watch. It's really hard to watch. There's a lot of really horrible things that happen in this movie that we see multiple times. And, you know, when you see a trial near the end of the movie where they're just like, well, we know a woman cannot get pregnant because of a rape. And I'm just like, I'm like screaming in the, like, there were a couple times where I was just like, because we've heard a lot of very similar things, you know, about 800 years later. So, yeah, I think it's really good. I think the performances are really good across the board. Did you guys like it?
Yeah, I liked it. I think it's one of those movies that there are things about it that are, like, I think Ben Affleck's casting, even though he's great in it, is weird. And like, maybe it's because of the way he just seems very modern to me in it. His character seems like he's an anachronism. Like, how did you end up here? I like the way it was told with the three different points of view. And I think it really, I think one of the things it does really well, although I will say the first half, I was like, who wrote this half? Because I don't really like how many times they say like, you're my friend, you're my friend. I'm like, okay, we get it. You guys are friends. But I will say that the one thing it really does well is that the characters are true to themselves in each section. So it doesn't feel like too much of a, well, this was his point of view where he saw it, where you don't know what actually happened. The characters are even throughout, even though they are different truths. And I thought that really hit home the ending and what, you know, takes place, which I think is pretty, you know, I think, you know, they kind of say that Marguerite's version is the truth. And I tend to believe that based on the other versions because of what has been shown. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was, you know, kind of messy at points and like, but that, so I'm starting to think that I like movies that are a little bit messy and not perfect. And I really enjoyed this one.
Yeah, I really did too. I was amazed at how much I loved it actually. Because I got to say like a Ridley Scott medieval picture wasn't exactly on the tops of my list for this year. But it is, first of all, probably one of the highest compliments that I could pay it is the 2.5 hour running time flies by.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, yeah. I think it's incredibly well paced. Yeah.
I did not know that I was in that theater for that long. You know, just was so completely absorbed in the story. And Megan, I did notice with the things that you're saying, and I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say that they were writing it and portraying the dialogue from the perspective of the person who is telling that story. And I do feel like the simpler section is reflective of Jean de Courage, Matt Damon's character.
That's interesting. Yeah, I never thought of that, that would be like, he's so, like, they make jokes about him being dumb.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's interesting. I like that.
But I also agree that Ben Affleck feels like a little bit of like he just got off a yacht with J-Lo and now he's blonde like Eminem and
it just didn't go like it just and he's great in it. I think he's a better actor than Matt Damon.
I would agree with that. I think Matt Damon is very workmanlike and very everyday man. And
he does a really great job of that. But I think Ben Affleck is a little more versatile. Like, I think he looks like the Tender Bar looks good mostly for him. I think.
I do too, but I
mostly want to see it for Ben Affleck. Because I think he's such a good presence on screen. And
he's incredibly charismatic.
Yeah, he is.
And it's a standard Adam Driver performance, this sort of, I mean, he's good in it. I don't want to downplay that, but it definitely feels like just a twinge away from Anakin Skywalker, but the.
Right. Yeah. And I will say that I thought it was interesting. I've never seen this. I don't know if I've ever seen this in a film where, you know, the rapist is not portrayed necessarily as this evil, like, mustache twirling type of like, I'm just, you know, he's a complicated character that doesn't know what he's done. And I'm not excusing that, but I think it's because women are seen as property, which is something to remember for the time period. And so he thinks of it as like a right, like we're in love, but you know, I have a right to violate you. And I thought that was really interesting that, you know, there's stuff that happens at the end, but he never sees it as rape, like ever.
Yeah, there's a really interesting scene that they put in there that I thought at first was extraneous, but I think it sets up the fact that basically it's an orgy, and at the orgy, the men chase the women around the room, and they say no, but you know, and this is going to sound terrible, but it's definitely evident that that is why they're there. Right. And so that it sets up that kind of in the late 1300s, it sets up that culture where Women just, they always want it, and they just want to be chased. And that's what he probably thought Marguerite was doing, was playing the chase.
Well, there's actually a parallel in the movie that I was actually sort of so intrigued that they put it in there, because in that orgy scene, which, by the way, you want to get the gays to go, you talk about how Adam Driver and Ben Affleck are easy, just like, here's my dick, let's just have sex on this bed together. I thought it was a very interesting choice that you see them like running around the table in that sort of orgy group scene, and then you see it not once but twice in both encounters of perspective in the scene with Marguerite.
Yeah.
Which I was actually sort of like shocked that they did that, that that was in there. And I, the sort of, you know, the lead up to the crime where you can sort of see that, you can tell the obvious differences of perspective, where like she is near the bottom of the stairs and she like takes her shoes off and tosses them. Whereas in, when you see it from her perspective, she like trips over her own feet and like kicks them off so she can run faster to get away. I don't know. I just thought it was, yeah, I think it sort of invites a conversation that isn't, especially about the history of that, because when you hear, I should say, some of the stuff that they say about the crime later, it's sort of just like, well, of course that's a horrible thing to say, but that is right. The mentality and point of view. Yeah.
It feels like a satire at points of today's, and I think that's probably what Ridley Scott set out to do, because he said it's not a story, it's a modern day story, is what he has said.
Well, her trial. Where she's put on trial. I mean, then I'm sitting there thinking, this is exactly why women don't want to report rape, because this is still happening today. This absolutely happens, where you look at the accused. You know, it's all about, you know, the Jodie Foster film. It's all about what she was wearing. How much did she have to drink? Did she dress like a slut? Was she dancing suggestively? Did she ask for it? And they go through all of that in this film. And before I stop, I just want to say, I'm in no way condoning what Adam Driver's character Legree did. I mean, by the time you get to the Jodie Comer section, you see, as you've said, you see those events in a very different perspective. It is very wrong. It is very clearly rape. She did not want that.
Yeah. It was rape in the Adam Driver section too.
Yes, it was. Yes. But from his perspective,
but they made it a little like, from his perspective, she's still saying no, but he's thinking it's not as rough as it is for her.
Right.
In that. Right. Yeah.
And it's not as long.
No. Yeah.
And Jodie Comer, Joey, you've already mentioned it. Jodie Comer is absolutely fantastic in this. I'd heard she was good. I was really kind of blown away by how good she was.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, not strange to see her in a part like this. It's just, she's so, you know, we know her so much from Killing Eve, and she's so calculated, and she's so, you know, it's just a very different part. And I was so, oh man, I was blown away by her. I would love to see her get, you know, some sort of awards recognition, but I just think her performance is incredible. And I think the movie does a really good job of, it's, you know, it is sort of showing how it is a modern, you know, it's a modern story, and it's still a very modern problem, but it's not just like, you know, like, it's not just like, look, it's not doing that in an obvious way.
It's not winky with it. What do you make of it bombing at the box office?
I think people were turned off by the runtime too. I saw a couple people today that put up, you know, screenshots of their phones. Like, I think a lot of people only had that movie. I think that movie was like on a third of the screens of other movies.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the theater that I saw it anyway, it was a big theater. It was only on one screen. It only had like four or five showtimes throughout the entire day. I just don't think it was as available, maybe. That's the first strike. But I was sad to see that it didn't do well.
Well, I think it's geared at an audience that hasn't embraced going back to the theaters yet.
That's true,
yeah,
too.
That's true. Yeah.
I really think that it skews older. I mean, it's got Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, Jodie Comer are not actors that will appeal to a, you know, 30 and below audience generally. They, you know,
yeah.
And it's geared toward an older cinema loving audience and people who know who Ridley Scott is. And I just don't think they're ready to go to the theaters yet. Plus, they've already said it's got a 40-day theatrical window. Well, then in a month and a half, you can see it at home. So why would you go out?
What service is it going to?
I think it's pay-per-view. It's just
Okay. Well, also, like, this is the type of movie that I feel like, you know, if COVID didn't happen, this is the type of movie that I think would have, like, a lot of legs. This is the type of movie that would benefit off a lot of, you know, word of mouth. So... yeah.
Joey, I will say it was on over 3,000 screens.
Oh, it was. Well, then never mind.
That's a big wide. But, you know, it'll be interesting. I think this may be the last year where people can excuse box office and just say, okay, well, you know, maybe this still is a contender for awards. Because it's during the pandemic, right? But I don't know that you can get away with that. If this had happened next year, assuming the pandemic is quote unquote over, I don't know that The Last Duel would necessarily get away with it. But I definitely recommend it. I think we all do. I think everybody should. If you love big movies, and that's one of the things I love the most about it too, was going back and seeing Paris in the late 1300s and seeing the construction of Notre Dame.
Yeah.
That was just so beautiful to me. I absolutely love that piece of it.
Yeah, it's an impressive movie, even from like the scale of the like production design, you know, and the scene with the duel. The actual duel was really good.
That was really intense.
It's intense, yeah.
And I have to say, again, this is not a surprise coming from me, but love the costumes. When she. Near the end, the last costume that you see Jodie Comer in the dress, my friend leaned over to me and he was like, "She didn't have to go that hard, but I'm glad she did." The dress that she was wearing. Although that's funny. To say, speaking of costumes, I was in the theater with a decent amount of people in it. I saw it on like a Saturday night and it was all just like dudes. And, I was watching the credits and this guy came from the back of the theater and started talking to another man who I will assume is a straight man watching the movie. And literally the conversation was, "Hey man, what'd you think of the armor? Wasn't the armor cool?" And I was like, "That's the takeaway that you had from the movie? The armor?" Like, all right, bruh. Funny. Stupid dick. I hate straight people. The whole weekend, there were a couple of actually after the movie went out to a restaurant. It was after a soccer game and a hockey game, and there were all these like all these people just at this pub that I went to, and they're like, "I've heard that there's this gay karaoke bar. Yeah, it's down the street. You want to go? You want to go?" And I was like, "God, I hate straight people so much. I'm so happy I'm gay." Anyway, that has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
I wanted to be as a straight person. Well, I never. Like, I wanted to do something like that. Like,
oh. If you have pearls and you clutch them, I would rip them off and say you don't deserve them.
Save your pearl ripping for the next Batman movie.
God damn
yes.
it. When I saw
is
the
that
going to
be in it again?
Oh, I'm sure.
God damn it. I'm going to go to a showing of that just to see that happen. And when it does, I'm just going to start screaming uncontrollably. It's like, just like a psychopath.
By the way, did either of you see the Ted Lasso season 2 version of that trailer?
No.
Oh God, it's really funny. I retweeted it from Awards Daily TV. Check it out; it's really funny.
Okay, yeah, I'll have to watch it.
It's incredibly well done. Very quickly, I just want to talk about the movie that ranked number one at the box office with close.
Yeah, I want
just,
to hear what you have to say about it, too.
Just under $50 million. Definitely got the kids to the theaters to see this and those who love nostalgia. I will not lie. I will tell you that I had a fantastic time watching this movie.
Oh, really?
Yes. It is a god-awful movie. It is literally so bad that at the end of the movie, I turned to the people I went with, my son and a friend of mine, and I said, I think they tried to make the worst possible movie that they could just to see if it would still make money.
Are you serious?
It is.
Actually, I want to see it more now.
So bad. It's hilariously bad. It is borderline camp bad. Like, it's just one of those things where, okay, do your characters do the absolute worst thing? You know, it's like that commercial that we talked about a couple of weeks ago where the people are in insurance commercial where they're like, no, let's get in the running car. No, let's go hide behind the chainsaws. That was this entire movie.
Really?
And Anthony Michael Hall plays Tommy, the little kid from the original Halloween.
What?
Yes, Anthony Michael Hall is in it.
Because he was in the original, right?
No, he was not in the original.
Oh, okay.
But the girl who played Lindsay Wallace, the little girl that Annie from Halloween is babysitting, and then Annie takes her over to Jamie Lee Curtis, and Jamie Lee Curtis protects them from Michael Myers. That actually is Paris Hilton's aunt.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and she's on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Oh, wait, I saw this. Yes.
Kylie Richards. Yeah. She is in this. She reprises her role as Lindsay, and she's actually not bad. The less you can say about Anthony Michael Hall, the better. But I will tell you that he is saddled with one line of dialogue that he has to repeat at least 30 times. Evil dies tonight. They get into this whole thing about mob mentality and how evil the mob is, or like mob justice and mob vigilante and all that kind of stuff. It's really heavy handed. I just don't know what they were thinking writing the screenplay. It is so, so, so bad. I really just rooted for Michael to kill every single person on screen. And he pretty much does. There are some people who stick around for Halloween Ends, but he kills almost every single person on screen. And he's an equal opportunity offender because he kills white people, he kills black people, he kills children, he kills women, he kills gay men, I guess he just didn't hit the lesbian biker bar, but maybe they're saving that for Halloween Ends.
Jeez, wow.
And Joey, I do want you to see this as a gay man. I want you to tell me if you find two characters to be offensive or just interesting and funny. They've been on Twitter all weekend. People have been sharing them all weekend. Big John.
I saw a picture of them. Yeah. I think that I am actually a lot harder to offend when it comes to gay representation on screen because I don't like when gay guys are just like, oh my God, you see, they're so effeminate and so this and that. And I was like, there are so many gay guys that I know that are swishier than that. And so usually if I see like a gay person on screen that is like gay, I'm not usually offended unless it's James Corden. So,
well, maybe friend of the podcast, Kevin Dillon, if you've seen Halloween Kills, you can tell me what you thought, because I'm sure you have an opinion.
Oh, yeah. He did it.
But basically, Little John and Big John bought the Myers house and they flipped it and they turned it into this elaborately decorated gothic mansion.
Oh my God.
But Michael wants to come home, you see.
And that, there are doilies.
I just don't understand the point of the film anymore when clearly Michael cannot be killed.
Well, and that gets to, and I don't want to spoil it, but it does get to a thing where they're making that so painfully obvious. Like, there's one scene where a bunch of stuff happens. Like, there's all kinds of impalements and beatings, and he just jumps right back up and kills everybody.
Yeah,
on screen.
It's like, it's not even fun to me. I mean, I do want to see this now based on what you're saying, but that's why I didn't want to see the second one, because it was just like, it's not even, there's no way to defeat him. It's not even fun.
Yeah. Halloween Kills is such a piecemeal movie that it's not a piece of the whole story. So you have to think, I hope that in Halloween Ends, they will explain. I mean, even if it's some sort of like mystical
Yeah.
All buried under the Myers house, and that's kept him alive or some stupid shit like that. At least give us that. And just instead of saying he's evil and you can't kill evil, then there's just no point. And I never want to see another Halloween movie ever again.
Right. You know, they'll keep doing them though. Like,
oh, as long as there's a dime to be taken from some stupid teenager in me, then yes, they will. I will say, just to say something positive, I wondered how, having just watched the 2018 Halloween the other night, I wondered how they were going to start it and get him out of the burning house. And it actually makes sense the way that he does get out. It isn't just a Jason Voorhees kind of thing. It makes sense. So I'll give it that. But yeah, okay. Halloween, super fun trash.
Stop saying mean things about me.
That could be your other memoir title.
There's so many of those. I don't. It's just a whole series.
It's a series. It doesn't die like the Halloween.
So, speaking of super fun, great films, Megan, I know you next week, as we've mentioned, will not be on the podcast because you're going to be covering the SCAD Savannah Film Festival. So why don't you give us a quick preview of the things that you're going to be doing?
All the fucking great movies you're going to go see.
Literally. Yeah.
So I was just making my list. Actually, I heard that. I was making my list of films that I'm going to be able to see. So I have like Belfast is the first night. Flea, Parallel Mothers, The French Dispatch. I think I might see. The Harder They Fall. I'm putting down a list of everything that I want to see if I can see everything. But I know some things will be hard. Becoming Cousteau.
If you don't see The French Dispatch, I think I can get you a screener, just FYI.
Okay. Procession, Mothering Sunday. I've never seen The Shining, so I think I'm going to go see The Shining instead of Passing on Monday because I've seen Passing and I liked it, but I would like... I know, I've never seen the whole thing, so I'd like to see the whole thing altogether. There's a lot of... Like, Power of the Dog, Red Rocket, Summit of the Gods is something that was I was interested in. Come on. King Richard's on there. It's just a lot of stuff, a lot of cool stuff. The Humans, Spencer, The Worst Person in the World, Cyrano, Jockey is one that I just saw people were talking about. But yeah, so I'm going to be there for a week. I'm excited. And yeah, it should be interesting to see how the last time I went was right before COVID. So it'll be interesting to see what a difference 2 years makes. And yeah.
Awesome. I'm excited for you.
Thanks.
Those are some really great movies. It's a really good year for movies, particularly Oscar movies.
I was listening to you on the Awards Daily main podcast the other day, and you were saying how you felt like last year was like, we've all talked about how I felt like there just wasn't a lot of there weren't a lot of movies, but this year it does feel like we're kind of getting back to that. And I agreed with you when I was listening. So,
oh, thank you. Yeah, last year. But this year is there's a lot of great stuff. I'm going to be doing the much lower profile, but equally good North Carolina Film Festival, Film Fest 919, which kicks off.
That's a good one
tonight. Yeah. Yes, it would be. They have so many things that I've already seen, you know.
Yeah, that's hard.
But there are some things that I haven't seen, so I will be there. I think I'm going to do attend a Q&A with Chris Burr something, the creator of Red Rocket and all those other movies that he's done.
Oh, cool.
I can't remember his name, but it will be moderated by Joey Magison from Awards Radar. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and they're doing King Richard tomorrow night, which I've already seen, and I'm not sure I could sit through it again. So it's not
King Richard.
It's a fine movie. It's really fine. It's just not my thing. I don't like sports movies that much. It felt like a little bit blindsidey to me. I mean, it's very well made. It's well acted enough. I'm immediately sort of bristling because I didn't think that. Personally, I did not think that Will Smith was all that great. I thought Ingenue Ellis was by far the best performance in the film, but that's just my opinion.
I also have issue with the fact that we're having a movie about, instead of the Williams sisters, which I do feel like movies about the central character of, like, they end up being like TV movies, which is weird. But I do take issue with the fact that we're talking about their father and not them. I don't know. That's just something that I thought of.
And it does become more about them as the film goes on. He is most heavily featured in the first half, and he's in the second half, of course. But it is more about the daughters as the film goes on, because it is, you know, they're the reason that they made the movie.
Yeah.
But you should text us and let us know what you see and what you love and what you don't like. Hopefully, you get to see Power of the Dog.
Yeah, I hope so too.
All right. So let's jump off to our main topic this week, which is HBO's Succession Season 3. And Megan, why don't you tell us where the Roy family are when we start the season?
Sure. So it picks up maybe just like a few hours or so after the big mic drop from Season 2 with Kendall not taking the fall for his dad and basically throwing down and saying that my dad is cruel. And I mean, he has like amazing descriptions that I can't think of right now, but basically says, I have the proof that he knew about these allegations. You know, he knew about this stuff the whole time and I can provide it to you. And it was such a great season finale that you almost are like, how are they going to come back after that? But I think they really do a great job of it feeling natural, of this is how they would react, this is how things would be. You know, Logan can't find his phone at one point and they're like, okay, do you want us to call you? Like, you know, just like kind of chaotic. And also that Kendall is like insane, and like he's an addict who right now is high on power, I think, possibly maybe cocaine too, I'm not sure, we don't see that, but he's certainly talking like a cokehead. But I just thought it was a great first episode, and I saw somebody describe it, it was a Hollywood Reporter's review that said a comedy drama, and I thought, I am so glad somebody is finally saying that, because this show is hilarious. Like, there's so many times, like, especially Roman's, like, even when in the first episode when Roman, like, calls his dad, is like, hey, I want it, I want to be CEO, like, afterwards, and he just sounds so pathetic, and then Logan hangs up, he's like, Roman's out. I mean, it's so funny.
Yeah, that's a really great scene.
It's just great. It's a great cast. I think the writing's good, but I am anxious to hear what Joey has some concerns that he expressed with me, and I would like to talk about them.
I sort of meant it like in a broad sense. I had wondered, because I've seen two episodes. The second episode, you know, they're sort of, I'm not going to say it because I'm sure HBO would kill me, but because this is their precious, precious show. It's, you know, there's still a lot of back and forth of who's going to take over stuff. And the circumstances obviously change. I'm wondering if some people may down the road say, okay, this is incredibly repetitive, they're just talking about the same thing for the third season in a row. I don't think it's going to be like that, because the writing is just so good. And the care... I do think this is the type of show where the characters, you sort of don't know, like, how they're sort of, you know, playing the pieces on the chessboard to try to get how they, you know, the stuff that they want. I don't know. I just wondered if that is something that we may see from people later. I don't know.
Oh, I want to add to that. One thing I think is really interesting right now is that none of them would be good successors, which makes it even more interesting. The fact that, like, Kendall's clearly not a good one. Connor's fucking crazy. Shiv has proven to be, like, not equipped for it. And Roman, of course, is probably, I think, the worst of all. But that's what I think is really interesting, is that none of them would be good.
Well, and that's the whole irony of Logan's decision that he has to make, is that he's paralyzed by indecision because he knows every single one of them. He has raised these children that just aren't capable of operating on their own for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But there is probably, I mean, that's, there's a lot of psychobabble there, but I think, you know, it's probably their, his lack of love and just their getting everything they ever wanted. I mean, Shiv's great. Shiv would be a great would leader, be, but yeah. she is so paralyzed by an inability to make a decision. She's so afraid of failing.
Yeah.
I think, I think Shiv would like just completely crack under pressure.
Yeah. And she's stuck in that marriage with somebody that she clearly doesn't love.
Although I think she does love, I think she does love him in a weird way. They have a more interesting relationship ever since the season finale. They've had a more interesting relationship. Like the dynamics changed now where she's like, I love you. And he's just like, bye.
Yeah, that's the first. Yeah, they says yeah. They're on the phone. And she's like, "I love you." And just waiting. She's like, "Do you love me?" It's just sort of, I don't know. I thought that exchange was actually interesting to see because I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. I also think it's interesting how every time he's like, "What about you, Tom? Do you want to be CEO?" And he's like, "No." And he like makes like a disgusted face. Like, "Oh, I've never thought of that." Like, even though you know he's thought about it.
I mean, I could see people thinking that. I will say that the name of the show is Succession. It's always going to be a question. It is, as the season progresses, as you guys catch up to it, I will say that it is not as primary. Like, there are some resolutions, some slight resolutions there, and then it becomes a little bit more about the stability of the company itself, not necessarily who's going to be CEO, who's going to be his successor, that kind of thing. Just stick with it.
But Game of Thrones. I mean, I am loving it so far, but Game of Thrones, you know, had the same kind of thing for how many seasons, who's going to be the, so clearly people are comfortable with the idea of, you know, what's going to be.
Well, when Shiv just starts
down there, they're just going to get dragons. So that's fine.
Yeah, they're going to get dragons. Shiv's going to burn everything down illogically because she's a woman and she's probably
and they'll give it to
period.
Cousin Greg.
Yeah, which that is probably I would not be surprised if that's where this ends up. That Greg is the CEO at the end of the show.
That exchange, I think, in episode 2, where he's just trying to figure out if he has a lawyer, is like the most deliriously hilarious thing. The show makes me laugh so much, and it's not even necessarily in just like the, you know, the politics of it, but it's like the interactions that they have with each other because they so clearly hate each other but need each other, and they have to like deal with one another, and they have that like sort of detachment from one another, like they don't know anything about warmth or affection or anything like that, really. And it's sort of, you know, just hearing them like jab at each other. It's I could watch it for 10 years. It's just so fun.
I am so excited to see that Sanaa Lathan is on this season. When I saw her, I'm like, I know her. Why? Like, I know this actress. And then I was like, is that Sanaa Lathan? Because she's a chameleon where she like disappears into roles. I think and just like. You know, she looks completely different with her blonde, like she has like blondish hair. But I was like, that's Sanaa Lathan, and I just think she's an interesting. This is an interesting part for her too. I don't know if I've ever seen her in something quite like this, but I was really excited to see her.
Hope Davis is new too, right?
No, she was in there last year.
Was she? Okay,
yeah, well. I had to look it up, but
I forgot that she was.
I think she was in like one scene or something like that.
Okay.
I mean, I think the Wikipedia does say that, or did say that it was recurring.
Interesting. I remember seeing stuff of, you know, new actors coming in, you know, for the third season. But
Adrian Brody's coming up at some point, and Alexander Skarsgård.
I feel like they would both totally. They would fit in there.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved the first episode. It was like returning home. It was just like there was something comfortable about it. I don't know what it was, but it's just the logic of what was. I liked that it was picked up so soon after what was going on because it was just like you want to see what happens those moments, and they did a great job of here's what these characters would be doing. Like, I really enjoyed that. I thought they did a great job with that.
I have to correct myself. Hope Davis was newly cast with this.
I was gonna say I thought she was. I wasn't sure about that.
Yeah, well, you've got the rest of the season is equally strong. There are two fantastic episodes that I will not describe. One, well, I will say that one is Kendall's 40th birthday party, which is as amazing as you can imagine it would be.
Kendall is so delusional and so, like, the stuff that he was saying, like, or even with his lawyer, what he says to her. Is that the set episode, right? Where he gets the lawyer, right? Or is that the second episode?
I think that's the second episode.
Okay. I just, the stuff that he says to people, I'm just like, oh my God, shut up.
And, you know, Jeremy Strong, what I love, and I could say this about most of the characters, what I love about these actors is, and the way that these characters are written, is that they are changing and evolving almost every episode. They are not the same people that they were in the second season, or even and definitely not in the first season. Jeremy Strong's Kendall changes pretty significantly over the third season, and they all kind of do in subtle ways.
I even laugh about, like, you know, the second season found him being very kind of sad about, you know, what he went through with, you know, killing somebody, essentially, or being there when somebody died. And now he's making jokes about it, where it's like, he said, my dad said I was he goes, you're not a killer. Who said I wasn't a killer? Like, it's like, oh my gosh.
Well, he also has those fantastic running jokes about his kids.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's in the second episode.
Yeah. And it keeps on going. I mean, it's just like there's this rabbit and he, you know, it's this is running gags. It is definitely a comedy.
I did like, oh, my God, when he tells his ex-wife, you know, when I made that speech, I was thinking of you guys. It's like, you're such a fucking liar.
Yeah.
You're such a fucking liar.
Like, yeah.
He's delusional. And I think he believes it in that moment, too. And that's just shows how great Jeremy Strong is. The fact that, like, his character, you can see, believes what he's saying. He's not bullshit. Like, he's bullshitting, but he believes it in the moment.
Right.
Yeah.
He's that psychotic.
Yeah.
There's that line in the second episode where they're looking for a place to go. And he's like, let's go to Sophie's room. And Roman's just like, forgot his own daughter's name.
Yeah, he's like, didn't know. So yeah, I was thinking of that too.
Oh my God.
It's great. There's one thing I want to leave you guys with. I'm not sure. I wanted to mention, you know, this is ridiculously early, but Emmy chances. And we're going to, Joey and I and probably Jalal are going to deep dive into this next week while you're gone, Megan. But,
okay.
You know, I think all of those actors who were nominated before will be nominated again.
Yes.
But I, as you both watch the remainder of the season, I wonder if Brian Cox really has the material to be in the actor race, considering how different the size of his role is against Jeremy Strong.
Well, I guess you've seen more, so you know.
Because I was thinking this was going to be his play this season. Just from the first episode, it felt like a more Brian Cox-y season.
Yeah, and his character takes some turns. But you know, it's very difficult to talk about this, I guess, without spoiling anything, and so I will not do that. But let's revisit this conversation when you've seen more.
Okay.
Cool. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Yeah.
All right. I'm hoping that they'll find some room on the ballot to put J. Smith Cameron in there too.
Oh God, I love her.
All right, let's move to the flash forward to the media we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. And Joey, you're never ready, so you can go first.
Awesome. I actually am ready. I'm only a couple episodes into Squid Game, but I'm enjoying it so far. I'm not sure how they're going to do this for a whole 10 episodes, but okay, I actually am going to, I guess, spoiler for Halloween. I bought a squid pullover costume, and I'm going glue game pieces to it, so I'm going to be a Squid Game for Halloween. And then I have the first three episodes of The Great, and I am dying to watch them. It was one of the things where I got the email, and I screamed like a little girl. Because, and then I have a huge list of movies that I want to see. I want to catch up on a bunch of stuff, but those two shows probably want to catch up with.
Megan?
Obviously, I'm looking forward to SCAD next week. This is kind of crazy that Curb Your Enthusiasm comes back Sunday, which I'm really excited about. But I didn't realize that also Insecure comes back Sunday.
Yeah.
I feel like I've seen nothing about it.
I saw, like, the two trailers, and I was like, you guys aren't pushing those.
Yeah, it's just annoying. So I'm excited for that. I have a new book that I'm reading about the college admissions scandal, the Varsity Blues. So I haven't started it yet, but I'm looking forward to that. And that's about it. Probably I would like to watch more Squid Game. When I'm not, I was drunk when I was watching it last week and I passed out. I drank too much Prosecco by myself, but I was just feeling very lovely and passed out. So I need to get back on.
I'm getting that Simpsons secret book tomorrow.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Yay.
When you mentioned that you had, I'm sorry. I just got so distracted by thinking about you getting drunk off Prosecco.
I know.
When you said, oh shit, what was the second thing that you said? God, it's pathetic.
Insecure?
No.
Curb Enthusiasm?
It was right after Curb Enthusiasm.
I couldn't believe that Insecure was coming back and nobody talked about it.
No. I'll have to rewind the tape and then tell you.
Squid Game? Did I need to watch more of that?
No, it was, you had a, college admission scandal. I was like, they've written a book about Felicity Huffman already?
Yes, that's it. Yeah.
It is about that.
Yes, that's what it is. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Operation Varsity Blues. Yeah, they had a movie about it too.
No idea.
Yeah.
Who plays Felicity Huffman?
I don't know. It was something on Netflix that they had.
I think it was a documentary.
Or was it like TV? Or is it? They had a documentary, but I also want to say they did something on like Lifetime or something too. I can't remember.
College admissions scandal. Yeah, the one on Netflix is called Operation Varsity Blues, the college admission scandal. Let's see if there was something. Oh, Lifetime. Here it is. The college admission scandal.
How did I know this much about it?
Because it has the most generic title.
I've quit reading Impeachment, the book Impeachment was based on, because I just can't learn any more about Bill Clinton's dick and how it's curved weird. That is like half the book.
It's actually, the Lifetime movie has different names. So it's like a fictional one.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I feel like... we mentioned this sort of briefly before we started recording it. I was saying how no one is talking about The Morning Show, and I feel like no one is talking about impeachment either. No one.
Some people are talking about specific episodes more so than The Morning Show. Like last week's episode is really good.
Of impeachment?
Yes.
Yeah, the only thing that I've really heard about impeachment consistently is how fantastic Sarah Paulson is.
Yes, and how miscast Beanie is.
Yes, that.
Which I saw somebody say that they thought that it was going to be the other way around, that Beanie was perfectly cast and Sarah Paulson wasn't. And I thought that too, but it actually turned out to be the opposite.
I am, however, enjoying Sarah Paulson on the new American Horror Story season, I will say. Which I'm actually into the new season of American Horror Story. So I feel like I can probably talk to about that.
But. No, you can't, because I read the Wikipedia summary after I got behind and I said, screw this, I'm out.
Well, it does switch to the alien things, right? And
Red Tide. Is that what it's called? Red Tide? Or is that the first one?
Well, the first one's Red Tide. The second one is Death Valley. The other one, it gets so bonkers crazy. Like, Lily Rabe is Amelia Earhart, and Sarah Paulson is Mamie Eisenhower, and she's like, and Marilyn Monroe is in it. There's sort of like a sort of over the top thing that I really love about it, and it's still better than the other American Horror Stories that came out earlier this year. That show sucked.
Oh, right, the anthology.
Yeah.
Okay, Megan, were you done?
Yeah, I'm done.
All right. Movie-wise, I'm looking forward to catching up to Red Rocket, as I've mentioned at the Film Fest 919. And I'm finally going to get to see Dune, even though I feel like it's been out for 2 months. I will see that this weekend. I, like Joey, am also catching up on The Great, and it is. And book-wise, I am trying to do my very best to get through Nicole Kidman's next limited series, which is sure to be Apples Never Fall, the latest Leanne Moriarty book.
Not good.
It's very long. It's very, very long. I've finally gotten to the mystery part of it, but it's mm-hmm. for 8 hours. It's a character study of this, of the people in this family. And I'm like, that's a lot of time to spend.
Mm. Yeah, no thanks.
Yeah. But, yeah. All right, so does that cover it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's get the hell out of here. So we are the 3M's contributors, Joey Moser, Megan McLaughlin, and me, Clarence Moy. Thanking you for joining us, asking you to remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find us, and wishing you a very pleasant tomorrow.